Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level.
All right, Chris George, Casey Cunningham, how are you today?
I'm well, Casey. How are you?
I'm so good. It is so good to see you. I got to tell you, when my team told me I'm interviewing the Chris George, I'm like, you guys go check to see how his sons are doing because they went through our program. And I'm like, that's the greatest compliment, by the way. Thank you for sending your boys to us. And, I hope they're doing exceptionally well because you're the father now of four boys. Is that right?
Four boys, and all four of them work for the company. So it's a wonderful thing to watch your children grow up professionally. I missed a little bit of their growing up personally, not the big stuff, not the birthdays or the holidays and the sporting events, but, you know, kind of the mundane, regular life, Tuesday through Thursday life, you know. So so it's really wonderful watching them grow up professionally. It's quite.
I love that you're bringing them up in our industry because, you know, it's all about really building the next level of talent and leaving a legacy. And you're leaving a legacy with your four boys. And, you know, God bless you. So tell me.
David Motley, who was the former chair of the MBA, he said something about our industry that stuck with me. He says that we are largely male, pale, and frail. And and probably stale as well. So so it's nice to see younger people and turned into the industry. You know, I think a lot of folks were turned off of the mortgage industry because of what happened with, you know, 2008, 9, and 10 and foreclosures and people losing their homes and all that kind of stuff. But it's nice to start seeing the younger generation really finding this industry the way it found most of us. You know, most of us are accidental mortgage people, right? I don't know about you, but I certainly wasn't getting out of high school. Hey, I'm going to be a loan officer someday, you know, be an underwriter someday. Right. I'm the least qualified person to run a mortgage company. I mean, I'm telling you what, I'm the least qualified person, but I'm happy I stumbled onto the industry. I think most people will say that this industry has given back to them far more than they ever thought that they would get out of it.
Oh, how true is that? Oh, yes, I stumbled onto it. You certainly don't grow up going, I want to be a loan officer. And praise the Lord that I actually stumbled into it. I wouldn't be talking to you today, but man, it's been really good to me as well. So tell me some crazy times we're all going through. How are you and your leaders right now navigating this current market?
Well, you know what? It's funny. I've gotten that question a couple of times. You know, I'm the last chairman of the Mortgage Bankers Association that actually went around the United States and saw all of the state organizations and went to so many of those trade conferences and trade shows around the United States. Brian Stoffers, who's the current chair for about another month, started doing that early on. Then COVID hit, and of course, it sort of sidelined everybody. And I think a lot of folks have been trying to figure it out as we go along. Something my good friend Bill Emerson from Quicken said to me about toward the last term of my time as a chairman, I asked him the question. I said, "So, what's a one-liner that you should use for 2020? And this would have been probably in September, October of 2019. Again, as I was leaving the chair, handing the baton over to Brian, and Bill said something which I think is quite prophetic for 2020. He said, "You better get comfortable being uncomfortable." And I think he was right with that statement, that this concept of this of change, and not just change that you have to evolve and get better, but the concept of having to deal and do things that we have never done or dealt with before. So, you know, we sent 2,200 employees home to work from their home. And then once we got them home and got them connected and made them safe and made the data safe and all that kind of stuff, had to figure out how to keep an eye on all of them, right? How do we make sure that they're being productive? Luckily, the marketplace took care of some of that for us. The truth of the matter is that they really couldn't do anything but work. They couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't go out to eat. They couldn't go to a movie. They couldn't, you know, go to a park. They couldn't go anywhere. So to that end, I think the industry benefited from people being at home and really acclimating into this remote work environment. for us, from a leadership perspective, we've been trying to be pretty, you know, pretty agile, pretty nimble, flexible, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
And when we say that, we're trying out stuff that we've never done before. So we have single moms and single dads that are trying to figure out a way for their children to be able to learn online, but they have to do double duty, right? They have to monitor their child like a teacher monitors their child.
Yes.
But they got to go over here and do the job, right? And
right.
And many of them are not trained to be teachers, which, you know, a lot of people discount the value of being a teacher. Both my parents were teachers. I know that your mom was a teacher. Obviously, you are a teacher. It's the greatest profession probably known to mankind. That my father would get very angry when people would make this categorical statement because they thought they were being funny. They would say, you know, those who can do and those who can't teach. Now, it used to make him angry because he would say, let me explain something to you. Every single person that has ever been successful at anything in their life can point back to a teacher or a coach or a significant person that took time out of their day to teach them something that stuck with them, a philosophy, a work ethic, a trade, a skill, that suddenly they were able to turn into their life, right? Whether that's a sporting skill or a skill alongside of performing, or for that matter, being at work. And so what we've done is try to say, all right, we've got these single parents that have to come to work. These are people that are handling collateral or mail. They have to be in the office. We got them spread all out. Four stories in this building, right? A building that's accommodating normally 400 people's got maybe 40 people in it. And the funny thing about that is that one of the questions that we got from a few of our employees was, how are we going to deal with this? So we have about a half a dozen employees here at corporate who are bringing their sons and daughters to school, to work, because wow, they can't send them to school. We put them in private offices, and while they're doing their job, they're also monitoring their child so that they can get their work done. Pretty interesting, because again, you're setting a precedent that I'm not sure is going to change. And we're headed to a new place. This remote work, we just finished a survey of our 23 or 400 employees. And dominantly, something like 72% of the people that work for us or have no intention to come back to work. Well, they coming back to an office, right? Their intention is, no. We've settled into this remote work thing. 30% of our company wants to come back because I think they like the camaraderie and the working together and colleagues and sharing of ideas and all that kind of stuff. But 2/3 of our company want to stay at home and have developed a system to be able to do so. So what does that mean? It means that we're substantially lowering the size of our offices. You know, instead of a 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 square foot office, we can get by with 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000 square feet. And yeah, what does that mean to commercial space in the United States? I'm telling you, we're not the only company doing this. We're not the only industry doing this. When I talked to your current chair of the Mortgage Bankers Association, Brian Stoffers, who's brilliant, far more smarter than I am by a measure of 10x, he says they're seeing a significant change in office buildings around the United States, that people are downsizing the amount of space that they need because, again, more people are like you working from home.
Absolutely.
So stay nimble, be open to new ideas that are otherwise different than what you're accustomed to. That so far has been our way, and stay connected. Holy tololi. I mean, I'm telling you, we're, our phone system allows us to do this right, Zoom thing, but we're talking to everybody all the time. And it seems like I can talk to you on my cell phone, or I can talk to you here on my computer, up there on the screen. We're far more connected today than we ever were with our leadership. And I think that's paying dividends to make sure that we don't lose our way during these times.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And listening to you, I think almost everyone I've spoken to would concur, right? There's a new lifestyle that we're all getting accustomed to, and sort of a quality of life. I mean, I'm home. I actually get to see my kids when they come home from school, and or just take away the drive time, et cetera. So, yeah, and I'm balancing it with you. You know, what's the right thing for the company and what's the right thing for the associates. And ultimately, if you put the associates first, it's going to be the right thing for the company. And so I applaud you there as you're listening in. And yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to be in commercial real estate right now. So let me ask you, now that we're in the mortgage business, praise God, we're in retail, right? Tell me about now that you've got this sort of new era, I mean, 2,200 displaced like overnight, how are you driving your corporate culture remotely? Because there was one and there still is one, but how are you preserving it?
And so that's a terrific question. It's probably the number one thing that worries me about our company today. And that is, I don't want to lose our culture. I don't want to lose who we are. Right. I like who we are. I like how we treat one another. I like how we treat our customers, our referral sources, our business partners. And I don't want to get bigger and become something that we used to be. And there's so many companies, when we hire people, I ask them, hey, you know, Casey, how come you're leaving that company? They got the same rates as I have, the same comp, you know, they've got good operations, good leadership. Yeah. You know, something changed. We're no longer the company we used to be. Either new money came in or new leadership came in or whatever. And we kind of hearken back to the days of, you know, the way we used to be. And I want that back. I want the family vibe. I want to know that my voice counts. I want to know that there's a place the buck actually stops and not some committee that I got to wait 3 weeks to make a decision. And then I don't understand the decision. Sure. I want to be able to legitimately have a voice in the process. And so one of the things that we've been doing is we have created this process or this system that we call CMG Life. Because if you don't have culture, if you don't have personality in your company, it's so easy to recruit people because you're just now looking for another, quote, job. You get a career when you sit there and say, no, I get it. I could go work for that company, maybe even make a couple of extra bucks. But this is where my family is. These are where my friends are. These are the people that I love working with and for. So we created this process called CMG Life. And what CMG Life is a fun way to keep people connected, even though they're remote. So there's a lot of methodology of communicating with our people like this through video. So I produce a video once a week talking about anything under the sun. Last week was September 11th and the odyssey of me getting home from Washington, D.C. while I was there in 2001. And it's some crazy stories about that. We talk a lot about what your work environment is like at home. So we have these videos that people upload. And, you know, this guy uploads this video of him getting out of bed. He walks over and gets a glass of water, grabs a cup of coffee and walks over his desk. And his desk is right next to his bed. So he says, that was my morning commute, you know. And so it's fun. It's like that, right? Yeah. They get their kids involved and show, you know, this is what my kids are doing, my dog is doing, my cat is doing, and then we give out prizes for the most creative video. So it really is making a difference. In fact, in a couple of hours, we're going to have a meeting about a virtual end of the year party where we're going to do some fun things. And I think what we're going to probably do is send a little party pack to everyone. We're going to utilize a couple of different technologies, the basic technologies you have, like YouTube, et cetera. And we're going to have a virtual kind of end of the year party to let people know where we are and do some fun things, have a few fun guests, and just make it that connection exist, even though you're, you know, sitting in your third bedroom or your kitchen table or what have you. Sure. I think it still has to be fun. I really do. And I, luckily for us, we have a pretty diverse culture, and we have a pretty inclusive culture, meaning that, you know, about 8 years ago, we created the CMG Foundation, which we give a lot of money to Open Doors. We give a lot of money to the cancer support community. We give a lot of money to the Gary Sinise Foundation. And people really connect with that. And we have an organization that doesn't have a hedge fund behind me. You know, the buck stops here.
Right.
And that's a big thing, right? People pick up the phone and call me and say, hey, can you help me with this one thing? So it's not... it's that kind of open door policy that I think allows us to remain with this culture that I can't lose. If we lose it, I think we lose what the essence of the company is. And so we stay very, very focused and militant on that. And that those are a few of the ways we do it.
I got to tell you, we have to be more intentional, all of us. Every single company in America that it has this remote force of today, if you do not get intentional, it will be get lost over time because you're by yourself on a daily basis. You're no longer around everybody on a consistent time frame that created it. So I applaud you, by the way. I love the CMG life. I might have to do the Zenix life. We do a lot of things very intentionally.
Let me give you that. That's one of the lessons, by the way. Good artists copy and great artists steal.
Yeah.
So
I'll give you credit, though. I promise. Always.
No, you don't need to give me credit. Believe me, I've stolen other ideas from other people. I only give Emerson credit for that comment because he made it publicly and about 2,000 other people heard it. So I figured I'd give him credit.
Well, you know, we do some things. We did this today. Like it was an anniversary. And anniversaries to me are really special as I share with my employees, I'm sure you do with yours. Listen, you come to us either for a season, a reason, or a lifetime. I'm prayerful it's a lifetime, but that's selfish, right? I really want to have impact with you while you're here. And I'd love to just retire with everybody and help them have financial freedom and just grow together. And so on anniversaries, we make that incredibly special to where we have the group actually share what makes that person special on our team. And so I take a picture, I write down everything everybody's saying, and I'll take a picture of it and say, this is who you are as part of our family. And because you're going to have birthdays, they're going to always come and go, but you won't always have anniversaries, or at least I hope you always will. But just in case, if I can impart some and help you understand how special you are while you're with me, and hopefully again, lifetime, then I've done a great job. So, all right. So what's the... Let's end with the big thing you're working on right now. Like, what's your greatest priority that you think, are you ready? This is big, that you're working on right now that you think is going to help the future of your company and or our
company? So a couple of things. So first, like I said, right at the top of the list is this importance to us not to lose sight on who we are and how we got here and how we're not going to lose what we have, because so many people are telling us that one of the reasons they came here and stay here is because of who and how we treat one another and the company personality and culture, et cetera. I think that you're going to see, and if you look at any of the statistics that are happening, number one, I think the Fed announced yesterday it's not touching interest rates, but more importantly, talked about how long it thinks rates are going to stay low. And I think you're going to see low rates through all of 2021 and frankly, well into 2022. So I think you got another year, year and a half worth of low rates, but at some point we're going to refinance everybody. I mean, at some point we're going to run out of folks to refinance. Unless we kind of venture Canada or Mexico or something. But the point is that the MBA is saying that we're probably a $2.89, maybe $3 trillion a year this year, with a big surge, of course, in refinances. And I think that's going to be a bit of a hangover into 2021. But the MBA is also saying that we're probably going to see a drop-off in production in 2021, something in the neighborhood of maybe 10 to 20%. Of total production will be moving down. So for three this year, and you see a 20% drop off, you're going to be $2.4 trillion next year. And every time I say, you know, hey, man, rates are going to go up and people are going to do less business, what are you going to do? Well, there's nobody says, hey, yeah, I'm going to fold up shop and get out of town. Nobody. Everybody says, yeah, even though there's going to be less production, we're going to do more of it. And so, okay. But I do think that you're going to see next year and the following year, a fair amount of M&A activity. I think that to Dave Motley's comment about the industry, I have a feeling that you're going to see a lot of folks say, you know what, I've kind of ridden the wave all the way into the shore, probably not going to see another massive refinance event. And I think I'm going to try to monetize the work that I've done and sell my company, particularly around distributed retail. And so, what we've been focused on is a couple of things that we think are long-term assets for the company. First, we continue to try to keep every single loan we make. So we try not to sell our loans off, and we figured out a way to be able to make as much as we can, not drain the liquidity of our organization by retaining as much as we can retain. That has put in a put a spotlight on the fact that the word servicing does not include any word called service. Customer service in the world of servicing is abysmal today. Mm-hmm. And what's so strange about that is that we spend 30 or 45 days with our customer, right? Getting to know them, getting to know what their needs are, helping them get the right loan for the right home, whether that's a purchase or a refinance. We put a lot of effort into that. And then we have this thing called closing, which is really an opening, because you close on your loan, but it's right. An opening to the next 30 years worth of you making payments to me, particularly in today's world. And man, we beat people up over that. We do not do a good job. When I say we, I'm talking about the industry does not do a good job servicing loans. Mm-hmm. And we get people that get so angry sometimes that they say, look, I don't care what you have to do, refinance me so I don't have to make my payments to that company that is acting on your behalf. So we put a big effort into taking that insight and utilizing a lot of the technology and utilizing our natural sales force, our loan officers, our 600 or 700 or 800 loan officers, to be able to be in contact with their customers when a servicing question comes up. By the way, it's not that complicated. When somebody eventually closes, there are two or three questions people ask all the time right after they close their loan. The first one is, where do I make my payment?
Right.
Okay. I'm supposed to make it to you in Northern California. Now I'm supposed to make it to Florida. Now I'm supposed to make it to Dallas. Now I'm supposed to make it to Chicago. Where am I supposed to make my payment? And then the second thing is, hey, I made my payment. Did y'all get it? Well, I don't know. And then the third question tends to be around, hey, why did I get charged this, or how come this didn't happen? And we think technology, particularly here, the power of your phone, is going to change a lot of that. So we spent the last year and a half developing our own system that we think is going to make it a lot easier. Here's the difference, though. What we see happening in servicing is everybody that goes into the process of trying to service loans goes into the idea that we're going to be everything to everyone. So here's my feeling about it. Look, if you're making your mortgage payment on time, man, I'm going to give you experience of a lifetime. You're going to say, holy smokes, it's the easiest thing to make my payments, the easiest thing to determine if my payment got made, where it goes, all so simple. If you're not making your payment on time, I think that there's a different level of service you're going to get. I think that there are rules and regulations around that that force that to not be the same kind of experience that happens when you do make your payment. I'm not trying to say that one is less legal or less compliant or less empathetic. I am saying to you that we treat everyone badly in the service world, whether you don't or do make your payment on time. I want to treat the people that are making their payments on time exceptionally well, and I want to be compliant with the people that may have a difficulty making their payment on time. At the end of the day, it's our priority for 2020, and we'll roll this out in 2021. I think that you're going to see a lot of people struggling with keeping their business because, again, servicing is anything but good service, and a lot of people have built up decent little servicing portfolios over the last year and a half or so. And I think that they're going to have to figure out a way to be able to do a better job at taking care of those customers than we do today. That's our priority.
You know, Chris, you just said something that made me really, really resonated with me. If I'm a loan officer and my customer calls me with a servicing question, I'm just more attached for the long-term benefit of refinancing, next purchase, et cetera. There's an attachment. There's a real relationship there because it's not just about doing their mortgage and moving on, but being there as their lifetime loan officer. So kudos to you guys for as you're building this. Well, I know the industry at large appreciates, first of all, your service as the previous chair of the MBA, because I was there when you took the baton over, quite proud and excited for you, and saw your four sons and thought, man, what a man. Leaving a legacy and seeing your kids and how proud they were of their father. So let me just say thanks for your time. And again, thank you for the trust and confidence you had in Zenex and placing your sons with us.
But you're very welcome, Casey.
I'm a big fan of you, and I just wanted to cheer you on and say thanks for your time. And some great wisdom you just shared.
Thank you for having me on your broadcast, as well as thanks for the work you've done, not just for my kids, but also for the rest of the industry. I think, look, we've got to intern this younger generation into our business, regardless of where it goes and who's right and who's wrong. We are an aging industry, and I look at not you, but me. I mean, look at
No. Look at me. I got color. That's the only difference.
So I think I think that we need to bring in the youth and those ideas that come with the youth. That so many people are saying, why don't we do this a different way? Well, that's the way we've always done it. Well, there might be a better way. And that way may not be a way that I'm all that comfortable with. But I think today, as you watch, as time goes on, I think you're going to watch some significant improvements, not just to the servicing side of our business, but to the entire aspect of how we service our customer when they need a loan to either buy a home or to refinance their home.
Well, you know, when your boys went through the program, we didn't have our processing program, right? Where we can build processors very quickly. It's always been just LOs. And even though our LO program processors were using it, we have a specialized program for processors. So we're hoping to help feed the industry, realizing, as you just shared, rates are going to be low for a couple of years. And this is a real opportunity for our industry to provide careers for those people that have been displaced in all those service industries that have been unfortunately impacted with what's going on. So let me just say thanks again for everything, and what a privilege it is to have some time with you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on your show.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zenix, the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zenix.com/InsideTheMortgageMind.